Visit a farm. Log on to escapemaker.com, New York City's guide to ideas on weekend getaways and day trips, to orchards, farms, wineries, breweries, and more. No car? No problem. This year, Escape Maker is offering the Dutchess County Farm Fresh Tours Program in conjunction with Metro North Railroad. Take the train from New York City and spend the day exploring local Hudson Valley agritourism with farm, winery, and distillery visits. Just a quick two-hour ride. For more info, stop by the Escape Maker pop-up shop located at Foldenstall Market in the South Street Seaport. Sign up for your farm getaway at escapemaker.com today.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
All right. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Heritage Radio Network. We are coming to you, as always, from the back of Roberta's Pizza. We are here in Bushwick, Brooklyn. You, of course, are tuned in to the Farm Report. I'm your host, Erin Fairbanks. We have a very interesting show lineup today. We're going to kick things off talking a little bit about Delaware County and what's happening with our friends just north of the city. And then in the second half of the show, we're going to learn a little bit about investment opportunities for those of you out there who might be looking to invest in farming via your IRA or through other means. And those of you who are farmers or want to be farmers who are looking to raise capital, I'm kind of interested to learn a little bit more. We're going to be joined in the second half of the show by Austin Maness of Harvest Returns. But to kick things off, we are on the line with Steve Burnett. Steve is a farmer. He runs a diversified organic farm, Burnett Farms, up in Delaware County in Movina, and is also the founder of the Burnett Group. And I just learned this morning, also a painter, a man of many talents. Steve, welcome to the show.
It's good to be with you.
I'm excited to kind of tuck in here. We connected with you guys, of course, through Escape Maker, who are underwriters of the show, and a great group for those of you who are interested in taking kind of trips to explore different regions in the New York State area. And so, Steve, tell me a little bit about Burnett Farms. How did you guys get started? What do you grow there? And what's kind of the lay of the land?
Yeah, it's a pleasure. My wife and I have a small-scale sustainable farm on top of a mountain in Delaware County. We're at 2,200 feet. You can think of us as a Zone 3 for those of you that follow that. For those of you that don't, you can think Alaska. We have a very short season up here. Our farm is quite like what you would find 150 years ago. If you take away the electric, plastic, and diesel, it's exactly what you'd find 150 years ago. We have cows, beef cows, Black Angus. We have pigs, a heritage line of Berkshires. We have several varieties of poultry for eggs and meat. Primarily, we're a vegetable farm. We grow everything that you could imagine having on your plate. And because our season is very short up here, we have greenhouses. They're passive solar greenhouses, but they extend our season to sort of a southern Louisiana habitat. So after 8 years of building this farm from scratch and knowing nothing when we got into it, we have figured out how to do what people up here said was impossible. We're growing beautiful vegetables on top of a mountain.
So when people from who've maybe been in the area a little bit longer come by, are they like, "Hey man, I guess you were right," or
that, So this is the creation myth. I started, and the old-timers came up to me. They wouldn't even look me in the eye. They were so embarrassed for me. And they said, Burnett, this is a rocky, cold part of the world, and I just want you to know that, you know, this is the rockiest and the coldest part of this world. You ought to know what we're calling you. We're calling you the city-it.
And, the city-it.
And they were right. I was an idiot, and I was from the city. And then a few years later, they came back, and at this point, they'd look at me. They'd look me in the eye, and they said, Burnett, we've been watching you. You've been working hard, and so we respect that a lot. We're dropping the city part. You're just our idiot. And they were right. After 2 years, I was still going through the learning curve, and now we've figured it out, and all these old-timers and farmers are paying us the ultimate compliment. They're totally ignoring us.
Well, you kind of have a little bit of a history of kind of setting new ground, thinking a little bit ahead of the curve. Now, the Burnett Group, what exactly is it? You guys have been around since, I think, the late 70s. You do design and marketing primarily for financial services. But for folks who might not know what that means, can you elucidate us?
Absolutely. My career in the city, which started with a career at Pratt, I got my graduate degree in 1979, and one of my professors hired me, and after a year and a half, learned everything not to do in building a business, and built a design communication company. Was very early on in taking the world into digital applications. Quickly discovered that Wall Street had all the money. And so I went down there and helped them with their branding and sales tools, and had offices in Zurich. We had major accounts with the Swiss in Bangkok and in Charlottesville, North Carolina, some banking centers and production centers. So it was a good run, and then I entered phase three of my life. You know, I ran my business well, I paid my taxes, I raised my family, and then decided it was time to give myself a gift. And the gift was pretty much a bucket list dream of building a farm from scratch without knowing anything. So I went from a Armani suit and Ferragamo shoes to Carhartts. I don't think I'm going to be going back into the suit. This is quite the life up here in paradise, up here in the Catskills.
Well, so tell me, how did you end up in Delaware County when you were kind of looking for a space? Was that an obvious choice, or did you look at a couple different regions? Did you know you wanted to stay in New York? Like, what was the thought process behind like finding that, especially because you chose, you know, by your own admission, a kind of unconventional space to start a farm, in particular for someone who didn't have maybe a farming background?
Yeah. Well, like many things in our lives that define us, like the people we marry and ultimately the jobs we get, we might be looking straight forward, but the opportunity comes right over our face sideways. I ended up in Bovina. I was driving down the road and saw a sign nailed to a telephone pole, hand-painted, said house and pond for sale. And I bought it. It was a little shell of a log cabin and 7 acres. We have 150 acres now, and the little cabin has expanded. But I can't say that I was that person who had a dream and a plan and then worked the plan. I would say that for all of us, most of the really critical things that define our lives just were happy accidents that we discovered fit and then and developed our language and our lives around that. So I confess to being just a very lucky, happy accident when it comes to why I'm in Bovina. And when I came up here in 1989, there were not a lot of weekenders. This, you know, it's 3.5 hours from the city. You really had to make an effort. There were a few of us that came up here for the beauty, and I was a weekender for 25 years, coming up on weekends and expanding this footprint that we have. And so it's not an unusual story.
Yeah, but kind of a. I like the humbleness with you're like, oh, it was happy, a series of happy accidents. Well, one of the things that you know, I think that Escape Maker does in a really interesting way is they put together tours and kind of day long itineraries for people who want to go out and explore different regions of the state, especially people who, like myself, are located in Brooklyn or Manhattan or down here in New York City. And, you know, you've been up in Bovina, up in Delaware County for a number of years now. I'm wondering if you can share with us a little bit about how people spend their time up there and maybe how that's changed for you as you've transitioned from someone who was there on the weekends to someone who's there more like 7 days a week. What are the kind of activities that fill your life and where do those things kind of overlap?
Yeah. Oh, that's a deep question. Number one, we now have fiber optics running all through the mountains. So if you do want to spend more time up here and distance work, it's possible. When I came up here, certainly that wasn't the case. The mountains are designed to attract people that are insular and private and very inward looking. Our mountains roll almost like the convolutions of our brain. There's a phrenology up here that defines and keeps people that really are looking for a personal escape. And with that, of course, there are, with all of these private people, the extrovert in us, and we go crawling out and we find each other. And it's amazing how many kindred spirits have come up because they wanted, through the beauty and the privacy, to explore that and keep that part of themselves, and yet they find each other. The community, consequently, has some shared values, which, again, are a happy accident, but it's a very strong thread that threads all of the beads up here, if you will. And people come up here for the beauty. This is the largest vegetative filter on planet Earth feeding a major metropolitan area. This is where your water's coming from. And the city, in one of the great acts of a great city 120 years ago, started to protect this area for the water supply. And they continue to. And every year, if you've got a piece of land for sale, the city will bid at market price for it, and it goes into these easements, and the mountains are going back into this wild primitive state, which is another thing that attracts a certain type of people. You will not find in the Berkshires or the Hamptons or the Poconos the pioneering spirit, because there's not the wildness. You come up here as a young person or an old person, and you will see and feel and smell in the air and the water and the way things go that bone in our body of saying, I am here first. It is a beautiful, raw, primitive, wild space. And it calls to me, okay? And if there is in that myth of the American spirit going to a place where you can forge your destiny, this place up here in the mountains is as close as we're going to find, I think, in the world today, a throwback to people that want to come up and test themselves, you know, physically and intellectually and spiritually in leading a life. So we have people like me that decide that instead of going into their leisure, they're going to go into their labor and they're going to build a farm. We have other people that come up here as artists and thinkers and writers, and they do other things. But they all seem to have this this grit and backbone that comes with living in a place that's a little physically challenging. We have real winter up here.
I mean, you're painting such a compelling picture. It's really beautiful too.
Thank you to
think about. I'm like, oh, all right. I'm sold.
I'm invested. It's a very self-apparent truth.
One of the things I've been thinking about a lot lately, I've been working on this project called the New York Grid, and we are thinking about kind of upstate, downstate connections and connections from community to community across New York State, and how do we think about ourselves both as individuals, but also as a state where we have these kind of common interests, where we have, I think, you know, the watershed is a great example, these really specific interdependencies. And I'm wondering, as someone who has spent significant time in both areas, what are some things that maybe you feel like both sides get right or wrong about each other? Like, oh, city folk are so XYZ, or country folk are so XYZ. Like, where are some of those kind of miscommunications happening, or, you know, maybe more true than you at first might have thought?
Yeah. You know, the stereotypes and the bigotries that come along with it seem to go away with time, because a bigot is somebody who, in spite of evidence to the contrary, continues to think the same way. And somebody that comes up here and thinks that country people are stupid and slow, they change their attitudes because their experience corrects it very quickly. And the same thing generally happens with people up here that see weekenders come in, and the expectation is that they're just up here to abuse and take advantage and treat people like children. And that changes, of course, with the experience. This is what, aside from that, and it happens everywhere in the town and gown city country thing, but this is the important part. Where do we connect, and where do we ultimately find ourselves out on common ground? It's this. Both city people and that habitat and people that live up here in the mountains share a conviction that what is meaningful in our lives is found through authentic experience. And we find that in our communities, and we find that in our work, and we find that in the air we breathe. So that is the language that we all ultimately come together on. And the connections that will be found out and are exciting between people that come from urban environments and then come up here is the storytelling of what it is on both sides that make life fascinating and curious. And because they're alien, lifestyles in the city and lifestyles in the country are extremely different. The stories, consequently, are fascinating if you have a mind for loving diversity and strangeness. And, you know, believe me, there are a lot of eccentric, strange things up here, as there are in the city.
I one of the other topics that I feel like has been coming up a lot, and I'm curious to get your insights on this because of your kind of background in digital communication. I was really surprised. We were up doing an event in Cooperstown a few weeks ago and kind of asking people what some of the challenges in their community were, and basic communication, access to basic communication came up kind of repeatedly in a couple of ways. One, looking at cell service and cell coverage and being kind of frustrated by the lack of it in the region, or the spottiness and kind of the challenges of being able to use this kind of relatively ubiquitous modern tool. And the other area that people were talking a lot was really basic access to the internet. And I think that's something else I've been kind of trying to understand a little bit better. I feel like I know that from an agricultural standpoint, that the U.S. government is definitely talking about and thinking about making investments in rural broadband service. But it was really different for me to just be talking to kind of, you know, regular people going about their day who were like, you know, this is a thing that we don't really have yet. Or if we do have it, it's not that great. And I guess I was surprised. And I think many of my listeners would probably be surprised to hear that there's many parts of the country that still don't have a high speed or reliable internet access or really adequate cell coverage. And I don't know if you have any like thoughts or insights or experiences there, but I've it's something I've been thinking about.
Yeah. Without access to digital technologies, be it through fiber or through cell towers, the growth and the connectivity to a broader, important world is not going to happen, and that is unimaginable today. To grow a vibrant community, you've got to have that. That's what government and industry working together can do, and they are doing at Cuomo. And the Washington, our national government, have put tremendous amounts of money into getting broad cell and fiber into rural areas. It's horrifyingly expensive when you're stretching fiber for a mile to reach one person. That the $100 a month they may pay for the service will never ever pay it back. So government and grants, it's happening. Cuomo is really pumping the money in, and we're going to see through the mountains. And we've already seen it in Delaware County. The Delaware County Electrical Co-op, in conjunction with two telephone companies, is stringing fiber to every one of its customers. And this is a lot of grant money, and there's a lot more pouring in. So I hear these stories, and I hear people that are that would spend their lives up here if they had the fiber. They're getting it, and the footprint of that is changing and will continue to change. For those that don't have it, then it's woe until it happens. There is nothing that will solve the issues of a rural community coming up to the 21st century without that coming in, and it is coming in.
Do you? Well, I mean that is good to hear. I think that there is this idea. I think sometimes a misconception that people don't want or need that access to the broader world, which I think again is like just one of those incorrect biases. I'm wondering if anything else kind of jumps out to you specific to Delaware County or Bovina in the region where you're operating that is making you feel really excited about the community from a kind of government or business or policy standpoint, things that you're seeing where you're like, this type of investment is really like yielding results for our community.
The results are young people coming up and taking a swing at businesses and lives that we've never seen before. We have a lot of people from Brooklyn that come up and start restaurants and take efforts at starting small-scale farming that have high margins, flower farming and so on. And we see people that can work from off base, from out of the corporate headquarters, coming up here. A lot of software programmers that are now connected by fiber are living up here full time. And what happens with this younger influx of attitude, money, and expectation is that we see all sorts of new events coming up in venues. I put on a fashion show this summer using material, agricultural material, Agribon, and which is a floating row cover. It's a white sort of linen, and this black plastic that we use to suppress weeds. And we have a very, very famous haute couture designer, Siobhan Barrett, who made 18 different gowns. I made a runway through one of our hay fields, and we had Michael Sikorsky, who was Lou Reed's drummer.
Uh-huh.
who's a local guy, beating on old junk, farm junk. And we had this fashion show that was as good as anything I have ever been in contact with anywhere. And the people that showed up, you know, it was... If Norman Rockwell were alive today and wanted to do a New York Post cover of what the face of the world should look like, you know, the hundreds of people that were standing in the hay and sitting on hay bales and watching our young people parade in the middle of nowhere, That's what's happening up here. People are getting these crazy ideas and executing them with an audience standing by to witness, and it's wonderful.
Oh, man. That sounds like a very fun party.
It was a good party. We served some good Manhattans out front, too.
Oh, nice. Well, so I know that folks can get a little bit of information and more contact info for you guys. There's a great little website called farmingbovina.org that lists a bunch of farms in your area and where folks can access farm stands or tours or that kind of thing. Anything else that you would point folks to as like a good resource if they're thinking about heading up your way for an extended weekend or, you know, maybe more?
You know, Route 28 is loaded with all sorts of interesting people and things. Come up. This is to say, anybody listening that it hasn't come up, just, you know, do this. Get in a car, a zip car or something, with the expectation that you're just going to head up into the mountains and get lost. You'll find a B&B or you'll find a roadside motel. And come up here and go into restaurants and stop at farms and talk to people. You'll start to connect some dots that will paint a little picture that you will, I would bet, will leave an extremely positive surprise. There are lots of resources in terms of tourism sites and so on, but if you want a real taste of the place, and if you want an adventure defined by adventure being the byproduct of an ill-planned expedition, just get in your car and come up and just bounce around by people saying, oh, go do this, go do that, and see what happens. Maybe you'll find me and my wife selling tomatoes.
Oh, man. Well, Steve, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you. And maybe our paths will cross in the tomato fields or on the run or on the fashion runway. All right, guys, we are going to take just a short break. And when we come back, we'll be tucking into the second half of the show. Get out your pens and papers. We're going to learn a little bit more about investing in ag and maybe some personal finance. Hang tight.
Visit a farm. Log on to escapemaker.com, New York City's guide to ideas on weekend getaways and day trips to orchards, farms, wineries, breweries, and more. No car, no problem. This year, Escapemaker is offering the Dutchess County Farm Fresh Tours program in conjunction with Metro North Railroad. Take the train from New York City and spend the day exploring local Hudson Valley agritourism with farm, winery, and distillery visits. Just a quick two-hour ride. All shuttles then transfer via the Beacon, Wasaic, and Poughkeepsie train stations. Itineraries highlight artisanal eats, craft beverages, apple picking, eco-friendly organic farming, festivals, and more. Or, if you're looking for more info about visiting local farms and wineries, stop by the Escape Maker pop-up shop located at Fulton Stall Market on Front Street in the South Street Seaport. Open 7 days a week, the market is rich with fresh produce, local meat, New York State apples and baked goods, homemade pasta, and cheese.
Get inspired and sign up for your farm getaway at escapemaker.com today.
Oh man, David, I'm digging that tune. All right, guys, we are back, jumping into the second half of the show. We are joined on the line by Austin Manis. He is the Chief Operating Officer of Harvest Returns, and he's calling in from, I believe, Fort Worth, Texas. Is that right, Austin?
Yes, ma'am. We're calling from the great state of Texas.
How are y'all doing down there?
Everything's doing great here. We got a little rain today, which we were very fortunate. It's been a while, so we're loving the cooler weather and the nice rainfall.
Oh man, well, you can send some of that our way. I feel like I'm. Yet last night I was so confused. I'm like, what's happening? It's like hot. It's humid. It's sticky. Isn't it almost October up here? Anyway. So I am really excited to learn more about you and your work via Harvest Returns. And I think what's interesting to me is the platform seems to give opportunities for people to engage with you in both sides of the equation, both farmers who are looking to raise capital and individuals who are looking to invest in agriculture. Is that more or less the gist?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, as we all know, especially a fellow like me growing up in the time I did, as the internet became a thing, it was that place where you could connect people of similar interests from across the globe. And so, that's basically the cornerstone of what we're doing here. We're connecting farmers that grow our food with the people that eat the food, and it's a way for those folks that care about what they're eating to have more of a vested and financial interest into the people of the world that grow our food and provide our clothing among many other products that we use. That was the key thing, is connecting those two sides of the equation via our platform.
So I know on the website you guys kind of use the word crowdfunding a little bit, but this isn't like a traditional crowdfunding platform. So maybe I'm going to actually ask you to kind of walk us through how this might work from both sides. So let's start on the farmer side. If I'm a farmer, I know I can hop on the website. I can send you a little bit of background information on myself. What are my capital needs? What I'm looking to do with it? What my experience is? What are the types of producers that are a good fit for you guys to work with? And like, how do you kind of make those decisions?
Great question. So, we talked about crowdfunding. The anecdote we always say is, especially when you're talking to a farmer and you say, hey, do you know what crowdfunding is? And they say, no, I've never heard of it. And I say, well, have you ever heard of Kickstarter or GoFundMe? Like, oh, yeah. I say, well, that's crowdfunding, but that's crowdfunding on the social side.
Right.
It's more of a pull at your heartstrings donation kind of thing. What we specifically focus on is equity crowdfunding. So when talking with the farmers, they've probably been dealing with their traditional ag lender, a bank or farm credit service that their grandpa and their grandpa's grandpa worked with for the last, few generations. So that's the financial system that they're used to.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we are offering is a newer version of financing for an ag producer, a farmer, a rancher, maybe someone that owns timberland. And so the process that they would go through is to reach out to us, and we have a conversation with them to try to understand what they're trying to do. And usually, the typical kind of deal that when we talk with a farmer is maybe he's over-leveraged in debt, or he's just, frustrated with the traditional financing process. Maybe he's a corn farmer. Maybe he's a pecan farmer. Maybe he's a cattle rancher. Maybe he's got organic porcupines in his backyard. That's the kind of spectrum that folks
Did you say organic porcupines?
Exactly. So we get inquiries from all over the globe, from Ghana in Africa, Mongolia, South America, and, of course, a lot in the North America, between Costa Rica and Canada. So we get a broad group of folks that are coming at us, and all different kinds of crops. So that's, you know, to say there's a specific kind of crop we deal with, it's really all over the place. But some that have a little bit more success with us are those in the kind of specialty crop arena. So if you think about, and you know, I know you had a episode a while back of talking about almonds.
Mm-hmm.
We've contacted a lot of almond farmers that, you know, they have an operation, they have a vision in their mind. They're trying to get financing. They go to their bank and say, "Hey, I've got this, you know, great piece of land I want to buy. I want to plant these almond trees. Here's the return I can make." But because it's an almond tree, because it's a nut crop, you're not going to get returns for four to six years.
Yeah, it's going to be a minute.
It's going to be a minute. So a bank doesn't want to hear, "Hey, I'm going to give you $2 million, but you're not going to pay me back for 6 years."
Mm-hmm.
So there's the issue right there. The ag finance world has not evolved to understand some of these specialty crops. So we get a lot of interest from tree crops, specialty crops that have that kind of constraint of, even if it's livestock, hey, you're not going to get your first return until these things mature, gestate, you know, and produce something to harvest. And so same thing with pecans, almonds, pistachios. So that's kind of a specific farmer that seems to reach out to us even more is those that need a little bit more help in that regard.
And so what I what that transaction is going to look like for me as a farmer is, instead of paying an interest rate to have access to that capital, I'm giving up an equity stake in my crop, my land. Like, what's the transaction look like? Like, how am I weighing those options on my end as like someone who would be looking to connect with you guys?
Sure. So, like I said, going back to the traditional style, you go talk to a lender. They're going to want collateral. That's your house. That's your land. That's your equipment. They need something that kind of puts the risk on the farmer instead of the bank. And so the farmer has his own level of risk, borrowing money, and, you know, maybe he's got crop insurance, maybe he doesn't. So there's that picture. Coming through the equity side, you are getting the investors to shoulder most of the risk. So you are getting a check from us that we raised money through equity investors, and the cost to raise that capital is shared among the investors. So let's say you borrow $1 million, it's a 6 or 7% loan from the bank, you got your $1 million check, but you owe the bank that percentage of interest. When the investors come in, you get your check, the cost of raising that capital is on the investors. So that cost to raise capital, which could be anywhere between 3 and 10% based on what kind of deal you have, could be legal fees, all the things that go into setting up one of these offerings. But that risk and owning of that cost to raise capital is spread amongst 100, 1,000 investors. And so it's kind of a shared carry the load. So it's a quite a bit different model than the traditional style. So when the farmer buys a piece of land and he offers a percentage of equity to those investors are now into that piece of land. When he harvests his soybeans and he gets his profits at the end of the year, he shares those in the form of dividends back to the investors. And so that's kind of, you know, like he would make a bank payment, like an interest payment on the loan, he's making dividend payments out to the investors. And he has the opportunity to buy those investors out over time. As his business continues to grow and it becomes more profitable, he can offer exit strategies to investors to say, "Hey, on year five, I've made enough profit. I would like to buy 4 or 5 of you investors out." That puts more money back in his pocket. And those investors get to, take their winnings home and then hopefully reinvest in another deal on the platform.
That makes sense. And can you give us a sense of scale here? Like, I don't know if there is an average dollar amount that you guys are traditionally working with folks on, or even just a range. Like, I know on the investing side, like me as an individual, you guys put on your site that, you know, you can get engaged, for something like $5,000 seems like the floor. And I want to talk more about that in a minute, but, just so we can get a sense of like from the farmer side, like how much capital are farmers usually looking to kind of raise in a deal with you?
Well, that's a great question. The scale is important because as we look for that range of raise amounts that we want, it needs to be at a certain level that can produce a scale that would be would have a kind of return on investment
right.
that would be appetizing to investors. So for us, we work in the range, and you know it's not hard edges, but it's between about $500,000 and $2 million is the raise amount that we're currently at. That's a good price point. It's a part of the market that is underappreciated. The below $500,000, those are typically more in the social crowdfunding side, or more kind of friends and family, and then higher than the $2 million is usually a larger. They're part of maybe a REIT or a fund that some of the big ag funds are dealing with. So that we feel that $500,000 to $2 million is our range. As an investor, the range for them could be somewhere between, you know, say $5,000 and $25,000 for the minimum investment. So of course, an investor could come in with. If it's a $5,000 minimum, he could come into it at $100,000. He would just have that many more shares.
Right.
So we think with the way the market is and what scale is needed to produce those returns for the investor, it's in between those limits.
Yeah. So I think that's still, I guess, lower than what I might have guessed. So you guys are really dealing in kind of the smaller to mid-range farms. Like that's still, I mean, that's not, I guess, of course, $500,000 to $2 million is like a ton of money to me. But I think when you're like looking at a farm business, or when you're buying kind of equipment, land, major infrastructure improvements, like you don't have to work that hard to spend that kind of money.
It goes quick, absolutely. And so and if you think about it, there's farmers that are the farmers that we're dealing with are not necessarily just starting out. They've got some experience, and they're probably expanding on an operation they already have.
Right.
So they're probably already sitting on a $5 to $10 million operation, but they see some opportunity to purchase this neighboring land, or they need to scale up to get to the next level in their business. And so the family farmer, the good, hardworking American farmer is you know, the guy and gal we keep in our heads. And again, we're thinking globally, too. We've got some emerging markets out there, folks in Brazil, Belize, like I said, Africa and Asia that have some great opportunity. They just need a little bit of injection of capital to take them to the next level. And those are the kind of people that we really want to help out. Obviously, we want to help investors out, but we want to bring investors to the table and educate them and have them be a part of this such an important business for all of us to survive.
So yeah, let's flip over to that investor side. So as an individual, there's a couple of different ways that I can decide to invest with you. And I'm wondering if you can kind of walk us through that.
Okay. So as an investor, you approach, just going through this, the very basic steps. If you're reading on our website and you're liking what you're seeing and you're interested in, say, an alternative investment, something different than stocks and bonds, something that's kind of real estate, but maybe a little bit different than the commercial real estate. This we are definitely in that class of alternative investments, which we have seen amongst other, whether it's the Harvard, dowry or whatever. Those are about 10% of those portfolios are in alternative investments, like precious metals or agriculture.
You said the Harvard endowment. That's what you just said, right?
Endowment. Yes.
Okay. Cool. Great.
And so that's something that we kind of use as 5 to 10% of an investment portfolio in alternative investments is about kind of the normal or the smart way as some of the specialists would say.
Mm-hmm.
So we present that and say, hey, you're coming in, and if you are an investor, typically to get into agriculture, it's pretty difficult. You either have to buy a farm, which is obviously, then you got to run it. So nobody really can handle that kind of.
Yeah, it's not a weekend job.
Or you have to come into one of the funds or the REITs, like I mentioned before, and those usually have an entry barrier of say like $100,000 or $500,000 minimum. So there's a lot of accredited investors in the United States, and there's a lot of investors around the world that can come in at the $5,000 to $20,000. Level, and we want to give them that opportunity. So this is that place that they can come to.
Wait, so Austin, can I jump in right there? Because so the What's the difference between an accredited and a non-accredited investor?
Well, that's a very important question because that's specifically lined out in some of the SEC regulations on who can invest in what kind of deals. So the deals that we specifically offer are Regulation D, 506B, and 506C, the majority being the 506C. So in a 506C investment, that's for accredited investors. And the definition of accredited investors is outlined, obviously, in all of our documents, but what's the norm to use is $250,000 annual income, or if you have a combined, like a family income of over $300,000, and then, of course, if you have over $1 million in investable assets. So that's kind of the broad definition of the accredited investor. And so when you, as an investor comes through the process, we do a accreditation check just to verify that they're within regulations and we are within regulations for these type of deals.
So is that like, I mean, would that be like when I apply for a credit card and they run a credit check on me? Or like, I'm just not sure. So like, do I get like a card in the mail that says like, you are now accredited? Or is this a thing that happens on like a deal by deal basis?
It's a little bit more personal. I mean, we have a service that we can use, or we can do our own specific checks. And really, the easiest way to do it is getting a letter from your attorney or your CPA saying, I have verified that this person's financials meet the accredited criteria.
Got it.
There's a little bit more onerous ways, like, hey, present us, just show us your last three pay stubs, show us a bank statement, anything like that, and we can verify that. So yes, yeah, it's not like a credit card necessarily, but it's a little bit more fluid on our end. So we can accredit you via the platform or via our third party service that does those quick checks for us.
Okay. But then also if I'm not like I personally wouldn't meet that threshold, but I could work with you guys via the IRA option. Is that right?
That's right. We do have an IRA option specifically for the self-directed IRAs. And so we have an option on our website that a company, New Direction, that you can set up an IRA with them and provide some of that. The other option, like you said, as an unaccredited investor, is we do offer some 506B deals. And then a 506B deal, we can have up to 35 unaccredited investors in those deals. It's kind of a friends and family. So we have to develop a relationship with that unaccredited investor, because that's the regulations. We have to have a kind of existing relationship with you. And then when a 506B offering is available and we've had that relationship for a while, we can say, hey, would you like to come in and check out this deal? So there's different rules on those, on how you can openly solicit them. The 506Cs, I can tell anybody about those deals and the details. The 506Bs are, you need to be part of our kind of inner circle to get the details on that. So going through the platform, for sure, you can kind of get through the gateway to see those deals.
So as an individual investor, if I'm thinking about, all right, I am, kind of saving for my retirement fund, I'm like trying to be a responsible young Brooklynite, and I also have like strong values, and I want to be investing in things that are in line with like my values and be conscientious about them. And there's a lot of different ways to do that. And so it sounds like you're saying that like you guys would be a good fit for somewhere in the like 10% of, I'm just gonna use $100. So if I have $100 to invest or $1,000 to invest, I would do, $100 of that with you guys. And then I would look at kind of other more traditional options for the rest of my $900. And that's just kind of best practices when thinking about having like a diverse portfolio of things that you're investing for. Is that right?
Yeah, you're right. You're right on the mark there. So, like you said, you're a young Brooklynite that wants to do the smart thing and invest smartly, you're going to have a diversified portfolio. You're going to have something in everything, and the best practices is to have about 10% in an alternative investment like agriculture. So, what we're going to offer that young person coming out of Brooklyn is that you're going to have a portfolio, and you're going to get either via your email or print in the mail, you're going to get some kind of dividend statements from whatever company you're investing with. The difference between what you're going to get with that, you know, oh, I got some Apple stock. Oh, I've got some, you know, Home Depot stock.
Mm-hmm.
I've also, you know, when you say I've got interest in a pig farm in Texas, I've got interest in a cacao deal in Belize. And instead of holding up a dividend sheet when you're talking to your friends, you're going to show the YouTube video of those little pigs being born. You're going to show them, hey, here is the crop being harvested in Belize when they're making chocolate bars. So you have a personal connection to the operation going on. You're almost like a member of the family of some of these farmers because we provide the updates and things from the operation to the investor via the platform. So you're not only getting a check when you're supposed to, according to the dividend schedule, but you're also getting updates. You're also getting opportunities to come visit some of these farms. You can go down to Belize and you can take a tour from start to finish how they make fine chocolate in a chocolatier's office. So there's all that opportunity. So yes, you can invest smartly in some of these other things that you should invest in, but when you invest in something through Harvest Returns, you are not only financially, but you're emotionally connected to the things that provide you food.
That sounds like very cool, honestly. And you know, obviously I want to be clear with folks, like these investments, and you guys say this repeatedly across your site, you know, there's not a guarantee of a return. It's like any investment that you would make, it could work out, it could not work out. So definitely want to, you know, be responsible in talking with your financial advisor and making sure that you're kind of making smart choices with money. But can you talk a little bit about, and I'm going to have you back on because I have more questions than we're going to be able to cover in the next couple of minutes, but agriculture as a space for investment. I mean, one of the things we talk about on the Heritage Radio Network a bit is kind of thinking about, you know, slow money and investments that, you know, you're going to see a return over a longer period of time, or potentially the dollar amount of your investment return will be lower, but it will, you'll have these kind of ancillary benefits of, you know, seeing something positive kind of in your community or committing to a cause that like you're passionate about. Where like the type of deals and opportunities that you guys are putting together, like is there just a range of things that kind of operate in the like dollar amount return where that's my priority, or the like I want to really have like access to special things that and like personal relationships and that's my priority, or like I just like want to feel good and like I don't need this money for another 20 years, that's my like, you know, how do we kind of think about what particular type of like returns, if we're thinking about returns more broadly than just dollars, that we would be receiving from an investment with you guys? Does that, I'm a little all over the place, but.
Yeah, great question. And so if you think about, like you said, you're a young Brooklynite with that $100 and you put $10 into an alternative investment like agriculture. If you were to go to, say, a fund manager and say, hey, put me $10 in the ag stuff, he's going to say, yeah, absolutely, he's going to do it, and you're going to, you know, there's, like you said, there's kind of the minimal connection there. You're going to get some range of returns, and what he's going to do is he's going to take your $10, and he's going to chop it up into dollar bits, and he's going to put a little one into this farm, a little one into this farm, and all these different farms have a different return, a different timeline, and things like that. So, of course, we definitely offer that spectrum where you can come into a chicken deal, and chickens are hatched and raised and harvested pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You can come into a timber deal, and now you're talking about a 30-year investment. So, you know, that's the kind of two ends of the spectrum, and we have everything in between. So you're talking about different rates of return. You're talking about different timelines of when the dividends are paid out. So you can take your 10% from your portfolio, and you can even diversify that even further into the different kind of deals that we have. So you can spread that out, you know, financially to say, okay, well, I'm going to get, you know, a lot higher return, but a longer-term investment. I'm going to get a lower return, but I'm going to get quick money back fast. And so there's those different options that you can, as you read through the financial details of each deal, those things jump out at you and say, oh, this is this percent return at this timeline and so forth. And so you can kind of spread across that. And on the social side, like you mentioned, you can see exactly what you're getting into. This is a family farm. This is a guy or a gal that is taking over the farm from their parent. Maybe a parent has passed away and they have to buy out their siblings, you know, to carry on the family tradition. So there's some connection there of you're furthering this person's way of life. And there's a lot of, you know, oh, our kid just got accepted to Harvard. We'd really like to raise money and get this farm going so we could send him there so he can come back and be our family attorney. So there's all kinds of cool stories that are out there that these farmers have that that people want to be a part of.
Huh. Wow. I'm like, who knew? You're going to tune into the Farm Report today and we're going to be talking about investment portfolios. But that is part of the world of agriculture. So here we are. And sadly, here we are out of time. Austin, thank you so much. I learned a lot. I'm excited to talk more. If folks want to check out the work, get involved, the website is harvestreturns.com. And they can also learn more about you there, too.
Absolutely. We'd love to talk to anybody that has any questions. And for sure, would love to chat with you again if you have the time.
Excellent. All right, folks. Well, that is it. You have made it to the end of another episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. What a fun show today. I feel like I was inspired. I learned a lot. I have more questions at the end than I did at the beginning, but I guess, you know, that's a win in my book. If you like the show, if you like what we're doing here at the Heritage Radio Network, we are member supported. I do hope that you'll consider making a little bit of a financial contribution. You can do that by visiting our website, www.heritageradionetwork.org. Click on that beating heart and toss us a couple bucks. Big thank you to Escape Maker, who sponsored our show today and helped keep us running. Definitely check them out. Lots of great trip opportunities if you're here in the New York City area. And then you can find me if you want more. I'm on Instagram and Twitter at @Aaron_Fairbanks. Until next week, stay tuned in. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @Heritage_Radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.